This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, today at the studios of Colorado Public Radio. Tomorrow, the state of Colorado will start to regulate the hundreds of medical pot dispensaries around the state. Police will check to see if workers have the proper licenses and certificates, whether facilities meet cleanliness standards, and make sure all the pot that's sold goes to clients who actually need it. Marijuana remains a Schedule I narcotic under federal law and the DEA, but under the Obama administration, the Justice Department decided enforcement of medical marijuana in general was best left up to the states. Here in Colorado, that led to a boom, with pot dispensaries popping up all around the Denver metro area. For decades, enforcement of all marijuana laws was pretty simple. It was illegal. Now, in 16 states and the District of Columbia, the job is getting very different. If you work in law enforcement, what has changed since your state approved medical marijuana? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, Denver's role in the Chicano movement. But first, the new world of enforcing medical marijuana. And we begin with Megan Verlee, a reporter here at Colorado Public Radio and a Talk of the Nation alum. Nice to have you back.
Always great to be here.
And Megan, one big change is that Colorado now expects to make money for marijuana.
It does on a couple of fronts. One, licensing the patients is a pretty costly endeavor for folks. It's a $99 fee to become a marijuana patient here. And then the centers face local licensing fees, state licensing fees. I think there was a moment when it looked like medical marijuana had arrived in the state because the state legislature tried to raid their cash fund to balance the budget, as they have done with every other fee-based entity in the state.
And were they successful?
No.
It's interesting. A lot of marijuana advocates say as soon as the state sees the benefits of taxation, that is going to change things.
It certainly, in the debate over regulation in the state, there was at one point a movement to make medical marijuana tax exempt because you don't pay sales tax on your pharmaceutical items. And lawmakers generally said, you know, we can't go forward with that. We're bringing in a lot of money on the sales tax, and this is a lot more popular with us if there's a state revenue side to it.
So it starts being regulated a little bit more like liquor rather than like pharmaceuticals.
Certainly, talking to the folks who put together the regulations, they were pulling from liquor regulations, from the gaming industry, looking at existing for-profit industries that have a recreational side often.
Yet, you say, have a recreational side. They're not supposed to. Is this a wink and a nod industry?
It depends on who you ask. There are certainly folks who will say that everybody with a patient card should have one. There are a lot of people who point out that the medical marijuana registry in the state is now overwhelmingly young and male and overwhelmingly going to people who list pain as their ailment. And of the allowed conditions, it's the only one that there's not a very clear test for.
And these are not dispensaries that are tucked away discreetly around the corner.
I don't know if you've gotten a chance to drive around Denver, Neil, but you see a lot of storefront dispensaries. And I kind of think that it's following a liquor store model in the sense that you get some that are, one might say, very much of the recreational culture. Daddy Fat Sacks was a name of a dispensary that has since gone out of business, but that we would cite here as sort of a cultural, from the recreational side, possibly, certainly a cultural offering. And then you have folks on the high-end side who are trying to look like health spas and organic food stores. But you see different types, and you see them all over Denver.
And it's almost a surprise. They're going to start regulating tomorrow. Medical marijuana has been legal here for 10 years.
We didn't have storefronts until a few years ago. In the spring of 2009, the Obama administration's Justice Department put out a memo saying it wouldn't prosecute people who were complying with state medical marijuana laws. And at the same time, our state health board made a decision that made it possible for people to serve more than a very limited group of patients. Those two things put together led a lot of people to say, hey, I'm now safe to open up a storefront. We've had them, a lot of them in the state, for about 2 years now. Well, a little, about a year and a half now. And so the state, after seeing what was going on for 6 months or so of stores opening everywhere, stepped in and started regulating.
Was there an effort at self-regulation first?
There was a discussion in the industry. I sat in a fascinating meeting in the fall of 2010 where you had maybe a few, more than 100 people from the industry and patient advocates, and they got in a room together, and you had one half saying, hey guys, we got to chill out. We've got to self-regulate. Can we knock off the neon pot leaves in the window? Can we seek a low profile, basically? And the other half saying, hey, you know what? This is in our state constitution. The voters approved it. Let's go for it.
We want to hear from those of you in law enforcement in the 16 states and the District of Columbia there where medical marijuana is legal. We want to hear about the difficulties of your job dealing with that, or, well, how your job has changed in any case. And with us here in the studio is Paul Schmidt, an enforcement agent with the Colorado Department of Revenue. And nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
And I wondered, how does your job change tomorrow?
We're doing the same job we were before, but tomorrow what really changes is they take effect. The rules and regulations have been out there. They've been published. Tomorrow's the official dateline that they take effect. And with that, it really takes a lot of the gray and ambiguity away from them into the fact where the prosecutors, the DA's office, and law enforcement now say the rules are here and they are in effect. And it makes it a little easier on the judgment now of actually regulating and compliance issues for us.
Easier.
Easier.
Easier. When you go into a medical marijuana dispensary, what do you look for?
Well, originally, we like to introduce ourselves. The industry really doesn't know us. They have a fear of us. We try and take that fear away by introducing us.
I think you would be described as the man.
Many times that. Many times we've been called weed whackers. We've been called many different names. But we try and take that fear away, explain to them our purpose, why we're there, who we are. Our protocols for coming, always with two, if not for a special circumstance. What we're looking for is their operations as a business, their business practice, how they take IDs, how they match them up with a registry card, how they verify that it's valid.
Are these mom-and-pop stores for the most part? Are these chains? How's it run?
As Megan says, they cover the entire gamut. We have everything from centers that may have a couple thousand dollars invested into the business and operation to centers that have multi-millions of dollars invested into it.
And they're obviously looking to make a profit out of this.
It is for profit.
And the type of marijuana they sell, it's grown here in Colorado?
Part of the vertical structure of Colorado's legislation is exactly that. All the products sold here in Colorado is produced and cultivated here in Colorado. Every center you see out on the street has to have an associated off-premise cultivation license where the product is cultivated.
So you can then check and see where it came from.
Exactly.
And do you check on how many plants that place grew and how much they sold, and does A match B?
That's exactly one of our functions, is to definitely, once we check into the centers, get a patient count from the center of their primary patients, see their operation, their volume of sales, their amount of sales, patients per day, average sale per patient, and so forth. Then we go to the OPC to compare the two, and is what being cultivated at the OPC with their harvest, yield per plant, other things taken into account. Do the two match up, as I say, between two railroad tracks?
Because this not merely the wink and a nod about who gets a card in terms of users. It would seem to provide an opportunity for these growers to grow a little extra and sell it out the back door.
It definitely gives that opportunity.
And I've read of, in fact, several cases in which Colorado marijuana was found, shock horror, in other states.
It has, and that's where we come in with our local law enforcement counterparts, and that is really one of the unique relationships we've developed in a very short time, is working with our local, our state, and our federal counterparts in law enforcement, that once we believe that situation exists with a particular center or centers and OPCs, we really basically partner up with our local law enforcement partners to do a criminal investigation on that side, and that's when we take it out of compliance and regulatory, and it becomes a criminal investigation.
We've talked about checking on the users and on the people who sell and on the people who grow. If it is a wink and a nod, or to the degree it is a wink and a nod industry, are you checking on the doctors who issue these prescriptions?
Okay, with the doctors, again, in Colorado, under state law, remember that our patients, our doctors, our caregiver, and the Colorado Registry, is all handled by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Yes, we have a good working relationship with them, but I would even say they are having difficulty keeping up with the mandates and, should I say, the reference calls from law enforcement and the center themselves trying to confirm, are these registry cards valid, are they current, mm-hmm. and how many plants per patient are the cards for?
It sounds like they're being overwhelmed, Megan Verley.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been just in recent years a groundswell of people applying for the cards that caused a real backup. That's been addressed, but we do have this interesting bifurcated system where you've got one agency looking over kind of the medical side of it and the other agency looking over the retail side.
And given those divisions, there's bound to be a crack in between those two.
Well, there's a big question in the state right now over caregivers, who are folks who are not storefront retail but have a group of patients that they're supplying marijuana to. The state has enacted some actually very much more stringent regulation of them than there was in the past, and there's a lot of outcry and even potentially a lawsuit right now saying, no, what's in the Constitution allows for this very small sale, growing and providing of marijuana, and the state should not get as involved as it has been.
Involved as it has been, there are, as we mentioned, hundreds of these dispensaries. How many agents do you have?
Currently on board, we're up to about 10 investigative agents and going through the process of a brand new agency and the aches and pains of trying to retain, hire, interview, and put people on board, which does consume quite a bit of our time in between everything else.
When you're training a new agent, what do you stress? What do you talk about?
We're trying to bring on board right now investigators that come with experience in narcotics, experience in law enforcement, experience in regulatory and compliance issues. So they have a head start on the game, and then there's a lot of learning on the job at this point.
One of the things you have to learn is that to a large degree, this business is now legal.
I would say the compliance and regulatory aspect is legal following state statutes. When they say legality of it, what Colorado has is an affirmative defense for the use of marijuana in a medical application.
We'll find out more about that. We also want to hear from law enforcement officials in other states where there is medical marijuana. How has that legality aspect of legality changed your job? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're talking about the situation here in Colorado. We're also going to find out what's going on in Michigan as well. So stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan at the studios of Colorado Public Radio in Centennial. It's been more than 10 years since voters here approved medical marijuana. Tomorrow, the state begins to enforce a series of regulations and enforcement efforts to crack down on dispensaries that may be dealing on the side and selling to those who don't need it. Michigan and other states are looking this way for ideas they might put into use in their own medical pot industries. We'll talk more about that in a minute. If you work in law enforcement, what's changed since your state approved medical marijuana? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Megan Verley, a reporter for Colorado Public Radio who's been covering this issue, and Paul Schmidt, agent in charge of enforcement for medical marijuana at the Colorado Department of Revenue. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And let's go to, this is James, and James with us from Sonoma City in California.
Good afternoon. Actually, Sonoma County, California.
Okay, I apologize.
We're about 60 miles north of San Francisco in the heart of Northern California marijuana country. I'm a senior deputy district attorney with the Sonoma County DA's office, and I've been a career prosecutor for 27 years.
And how has your job changed since medical marijuana came in?
Dramatically, from a number of perspectives. Marijuana cases are very labor-intensive in terms of court time. There's a lot of law and motion work, motions to suppress, motions to traverse search warrants, etc. A huge cottage industry has sprung up among the criminal defense bar, who many now do nothing but marijuana cases. Juries, at least in this part of the world, are quite reluctant to return guilty verdicts on simply marijuana. We really pick and choose what cases we want to put in front of a jury, and we try and have cases that involve firearms, other drugs such as methamphetamine, and defendants with prior felony convictions or prior prison commitments.
You mentioned Sonoma County is the heart of the industry. It's the number one cash crop in that part of the state.
Well, probably runs a close second behind grapes.
All right. We'll give you grapes there, but there are places in Northern California where this is the most important industry. And as you say, juries are reluctant to do it unless there's something else involved, like a firearms charge.
Pretty much. I mean, the last strictly marijuana conviction in this county, I probably got, and that was probably 10 or 11 years ago, and we would not have gotten that conviction today.
And as you look toward the future, I don't think it would surprise people to say that, at least in many parts of California, this is a wink and a nod industry, and anybody who really wants to buy marijuana does not have to work very hard to get a card.
Not at all. We find routinely people have marijuana cards like they have a cell phone. People get prescriptions from doctors, and these people look like triathletes, yet they have this boilerplate form that says they have some type of ailment or malady, and it's never specified. We routinely, on Highway 101, interdict large shipments of marijuana, and by large, I mean 80, 100 pounds or more, people taking it down to Los Angeles to sell it. The one bright light in all this is the California Supreme Court has given us some guidance as to what a caretaker is and what a collective is. The law is still murky, but it's a little clearer than what it has been. And it's really something of a minefield for a prosecutor. You have to be very, very assiduous and very careful about the facts in your case and how those facts apply to the current relevant law.
If you had your druthers, would you go back to the old days where open shut, it's just illegal?
Well, there's something to be said for that. Also, my father, bless him, was a surgeon for 50 years, and I believe if there is a legitimate, emphasize legitimate, medical use for anything, tree bark, what have you, marijuana, it should be used. But it's been, the rubric now is medical, and it's been blown completely out of proportion, and it really has little, if anything, to do with medicine as we understand that term.
Let me ask Paul Schmidt about that. You not only have experience as the agent in charge of enforcement for medical marijuana here in Colorado's Department of Revenue, you used to work for the DEA.
That's correct.
And I wonder what you think about James's contribution here.
No, I agree with James very much. I really believe for a legitimate application of a natural product that can help individuals that are in chronic need, whether it be cancer, whether it be pain, whether it be a terminal illness, there should be an application for it. Unfortunately, as James brought out and as we brought out in the state of Colorado, the system in its entirety is set up for those who really need it. It's the abuse of the system that gets out of control. And when we say abuse, that is who is actually writing, as we say here, the referrals for the use of marijuana for their condition. And if you can simply walk into any doctor's office and say, I have a chronic pain, and the doctor is tempted by the volume of people they see, if a doctor is tempted by the amount of money they can make doing it, it leads to one of the biggest problems, and that's people walking away with a referral for the use of marijuana. They can get their registry card then. And as James says, you see triathletes, skiers, motorcycles, a great day at sport, and then you sit down and say, oh, it's time to medicate now because I hurt.
James, thanks very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the phone call. And that's obviously a call from California. Megan Verlee, and I know you've been covering it here in Colorado, but every state has slightly different regulations.
It's true. And there are 16 states in the District of Columbia that allow medical marijuana in some way or another right now. And actually, Massachusetts is considering, and I believe kind of at this moment. A lot of states, probably maybe the majority of them, have looked at a nonprofit model, very different than we have here in Colorado, and often a very state-controlled model where there's a certain number of centers, they're licensed to certain areas. Colorado is one of the few states that's kind of taken a free market approach where if you meet the state's criteria and have the money to get into this business, there's now a moratorium on licenses, but for a while you could get into it. And there are a lot, some states where in the gap between regulation and no regulation, lots of storefronts have opened up that are now shutting down, actually. Oregon, a lot of their dispensaries are closing, Montana as well, Washington and Arizona, because in part the Obama administration has really changed the signals it's sending about whether or not it's going to prosecute this industry.
In the beginning, states, you do it. We're not going to get involved now. Maybe we will.
There have been a series of letters coming out from U.S. attorneys they contain some boilerplate language and some specific to the state. What happens is state or local officials have been writing to their U.S. attorneys saying, hey, can we do this? We're looking at licensing it this way. What do you say to that? And the letter they get back consistently is, this is an illegal substance. If you are involved in it, we can prosecute. And in some states, the real concern with the nonprofit state-controlled model is, then do state employees become liable for being involved with this industry? I'd be curious if Paul and his office have discussed whether you are at risk of federal crackdowns.
We have. We've really discussed this point, and some have really taken it to heart and decided to kind of stay away from this division at this time to see what happens in the future. Coming from the federal side, I can say, knowing the federal system, retiring from the federal system, the resources available in the federal system. The federal system, as we remember, no matter what acronym or agency and department you work for, was never structured to go after an individual. It's always structured to go after an organization, a group, a conspiracy. And that's why a lot of us in law enforcement that have worked that feel comfortable in the positions we are today as individuals, because it's not a conspiracy and you don't have the Department of Revenue in the state of Colorado meeting behind a closed door to say, this is going to be a great industry for all of us and we're all going to profit from it. It's not. It's very transparent. It's open for everything. And that's where we feel from the federal side and the federal watching us, we feel we have many more states watching Colorado go forward and let Colorado work through the bumps and the hurdles. And whether it be 1, 2, 3 years down the road, okay, Colorado has a model that seems to be working and accepted now. Let's pick and choose from that what will work in our particular states.
One of those states is Michigan. And joining us now from member station WDET in Detroit is Sarah Swick. She's a reporter for Michigan Radio. And thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
And Michigan passed a medical marijuana law, but does not yet have a statewide system set up to regulate it, correct?
No, we do not. As of 2008, there was a voter-approved initiative. It was pretty overwhelming margin of approval of 60-plus percent. But since then, there have been numerous problems in terms of how this law is being it's being enforced and how it's being interpreted. There are differences between different counties, different courts, and different law enforcement priorities in different places.
Well, you'd think the state attorney general would be the one to set the guidelines.
Well, actually, very recently he has. Under Michigan's Medical Marijuana Act, patients and caregivers, who are the people who can legally grow and provide for medical marijuana patients, can have up to 12 plants per patient. But a patient or a person is only allowed to legally possess about 2.5 ounces of marijuana at any given time. Well, according to someone in law enforcement I talked to, about one marijuana plant is about comes out to about 1 pound of marijuana. So if you do the math there, the grower ends up with a lot more marijuana than the patient can legally use or possess at any one time. So State Attorney General Bill Schuette has said that those operations, if there's a person, for example, who's a caregiver supplying for 4 or 5 patients, they cannot have, say, 60 plants in one area. They need to have a separate and secure facility for each 12 plants. And that's been that idea. Well, first of all, it sort of gets rid of this whole idea of collectives, obviously. And then secondly, there's, you know, been differences in interpretation in terms of what is a secured area. Is it a yard with a fence around it, or is it in your basement locked away and completely out of sight?
Megan?
I had a question, because it sounds like there's a lot of control going on at the state level, but I noticed when I Googled Michigan and dispensaries, it seemed like a lot of businesses popped up. Is there a lot of storefront right now?
It depends where you go. If you were to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, for example, there are some dispensaries that are operating fairly openly and pretty much unmolested by law enforcement, from what I can tell, and throughout the state. But in Oakland County, which is essentially suburban Detroit, there has also been a flourishing of dispensaries, as there have been in various parts of the state. But the sheriff in that county has taken a pretty aggressive approach to shutting down dispensaries, saying that dispensaries are not explicitly allowed under the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, which is true. However, they're also not explicitly prohibited.
Is this driving the cops crazy?
It is driving the cops absolutely crazy. One law enforcement officer I talked to who actually works in Oakland County said, you know, we're pulling our hair out here, that this has just made their lives so much more difficult and complicated, and that they really spend a lot of time doing medical marijuana enforcement, but it's very complicated because they don't have access to a registry of patients and caregivers. So if, say, a neighbor were to call and say, I think my neighbor is growing marijuana or smoking marijuana or whatever, there's no way for them to go into any kind of registry and see if that person is registered as a patient or a caregiver. So this officer
that I talked to... And they don't want to be seen battering down the door of cancer patients either.
Well, this officer that I talked to says that he's been involved in about a dozen raids where they've gotten in there and, you know, they realize that it's a mistake, that this person is in compliance with the law. And all they can say at that point is sorry and, you know, you need to get your front door put back on the house.
We're talking with Sarah Swick, a reporter for Michigan Radio, with us from WDET in Detroit. We're at Colorado Public Radio in Centennial. With us, one of their reporters, Megan Verlee. Also, Paul Schmidt is with us, agent in charge of enforcement for medical marijuana at the Colorado Department of Revenue. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. George is on the line calling from Sacramento.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, I think the description that the laws are driving law enforcement crazy are a very accurate description. I'm a law enforcement officer in Sacramento, California. It's the capital of California. A number of years ago, Californians passed Proposition 215, which allowed for the use of medical marijuana and for cooperative distributions. However, last year, Californians overwhelmingly overturned a initiative to legalize simple possession for everybody. So clearly, California wasn't ready to simply legalize mere possession of marijuana for everyone. But de facto, right now in this state, at least in my community, if you get a medical marijuana recommendation, and it's not a prescription, it's a recommendation from a doctor, it leaves you almost immune from any sort of enforcement possession or cultivation. And as we're running into situations, I personally have run into situations where persons are on probation or parole for drug distribution that are now cultivating marijuana in their garage. And I mean fairly sophisticated operations. And simply because they possess that that recommendation, we can't do anything to them. And the parole and probation system has a hands-off approach to it as well. One of the other things that I think is overwhelmingly overlooked in this whole discussion here is the act of cultivating marijuana. It's treated, at least at the cooperative level, they try to address marijuana as if it's a above board medicine, as if it's a prescribed medicine. But we don't have home people producing other types of medicine like OxyContin or things of that nature. Yet we have people cultivating marijuana in their garage or in their backyards, thousands of dollars a pound, and we regularly run into people that are victims of home invasion robberies when their homes are stolen. And that affects the whole community. It affects your neighbor. It affects everybody.
George, thanks very much for the call. Your cell phone is betraying you a little bit, but we appreciate you joining the conversation.
Thank you.
And here's an email that we have, this from Mary. As the spouse and caregiver for an Oregon medical marijuana patient, I'm so frustrated by the talk of how easy and cheap it is to get a medical marijuana card. It's neither cheap, at least for us, and the cost was just doubled by the state, nor easy. My husband underwent significant testing by several specialists. His records were gone over by multiple healthcare professionals for them to agree he had a legitimate need. He grows his own, and no, you do not get a pound of medicine per plant. I know there are cheaters, as there are in any system, but will you rather these people be using marijuana or high doses of true narcotics? Doctors are willing to prescribe lots of pills. And Megan, she's got a point. And again, all the laws are different in different places.
And that gets brought up a lot in testimony about medical marijuana bills in the state, that there are a lot of opiates prescribed by doctors. Here, one argument that's been made a fair amount and I think carries some weight is that one reason we have certain doctors who write a lot of medical marijuana recommendations is because most of the health systems in the state don't let their doctors write recommendations for it. Certainly if you're a Medicaid or a Medicare patient, that's not covered. And many of the large hospitals and health systems won't let their physicians do it. So people will maybe get sort of a primary diagnosis of pain or cancer or something and then go to a doctor who specializes in a medical marijuana recommendation.
Paul Schmidt, let me turn to you for the last word and really going back on all of your experience with the DEA and now here in Colorado. What would you say to police officers who are facing this difficult world? And obviously, it's a difficult world for patients and clearly for growers and people who run dispensaries, too.
I would say to my fellow law enforcement co-workers out there not to give up, that it's definitely not time to put our heads in the sand and say, oh, I never thought this would ever happen to us. I thought it'd go away. It's here. It's something we have to deal with. And the more proactive we become with it and involved with it is the strength of the system itself. It's that perception, and we have to educate not only the public, but ourselves.
Paul Schmidt, thank you very much for your time today. Thanks is also to Megan Verlee of Colorado Public Radio and Sarah Swick of Michigan Radio. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.